Focus of her work is addressing environmental health and justice issues of the communities in and around Rochester through policy change. Dr. Korfmacher coordinates the EHSC's Community Advisory Board and participates in many local, state, and national organizations related to community environmental health. Her research as a policy scientist explores the use of science by community groups trying to solve environmental problems. So, and I just realized I didn't introduce myself. I apologize. I'm Dr. Jalon White Newsom, and I'm a postdoc with the Union of Concerned Scientists and also a federal policy analyst with an environmental justice organization called We Act for Environmental Justice. So at this time, Dr. Korfmacher, let's welcome her.
Thank you. Okay. And you, 20 minutes, right? Okay. I just wanted to start by asking how many of you are familiar with health impact assessments? Okay, that's helpful. Because I did sort of design this assuming that most people knew what that was, so I won't have to spend a lot of time on that. No disclosures. So what I'm going to be talking about today is a project that we've been working on for about 9 months now, and it's a health impact assessment that's looking at local waterfront revitalization in Rochester, New York. It's a collaborative process between my department, the Environmental Health Sciences Center, and we have a planning consultant. And I just wanted to make a side note that I really wanted to involve a private sector planner in this because we're in an area where government is really under siege, under budgeted, really doesn't have the resources to do a lot of the planning work that we might think of as a typical municipal function. So I think that getting this kind of work into the private consultant community is actually, perhaps counterintuitively, really important to sustaining it over time. So Carrie Ivers is a planning consultant working with us. So we are partnering with the City of Rochester, which doesn't have its own health department. We have a county health department, and that's one of the central purposes of our project is to try to create a bridge between those two, and then many non-governmental and community stakeholders. This is a project that's supported by the Health Impact Project, the collaborative of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Pew Charitable Trusts. So I'm just going to quickly tell you about the local waterfront revitalization program that our health impact assessment, our HIA, is supporting. Then talk a little bit about health and waterways and focusing in on water quality and health, and then lay out a question that I have about implications for HIA. So one way of doing a presentation is to tell you all the wonderful stuff we've done. I use it much more selfishly. I would like to ask for your input and help on a question that's particularly challenging us. So for those of you who aren't familiar with health impact assessment, it really is just a framework for bringing primarily existing health information into non-health decision-making processes. The definition is a combination of procedures, methods, and tools that systematically judges the potential and sometimes unintended effects of a policy, plan, program, or project on the health of a population and the distribution of those effects within the population. HIA identifies appropriate actions to manage those effects. Now, you can parse every phrase of that really long definition, and I'm not going to, but if you're interested in that, I've provided two key links at the bottom for a quick orientation to HIA. Now, if you're familiar with the practice of HIA, there have been assessments done of many, many different kinds of policies, including a lot of land use development and planning processes, farm bill, even incarceration, labor policy, immigration, ports, and education. But there haven't been any that I've found that look specifically at water quality. And so that's something that even though it's only one part of our HIA, I'm really trying to focus on do well, because I think that it's a unique and a new part of HIA practice. So we are applying HIA to a local waterfront revitalization program, which is basically like a comprehensive planning program for the waterfront area in Rochester. It's part of the Federal Coastal Zone Management Program, and within New York State, that's how it's implemented. Each urban area needs to have a local waterfront revitalization plan. Once it does, all federal actions within that area have to be compliant. So it's kind of a nice tool. It actually has more teeth than comprehensive planning in the rest of the city. And so it can that plan will, at least theoretically, guide decisions at all levels of government. And the process of writing LWRP includes opportunities for public involvement. And the plans that are written have to address 11 policy statements, but none of those explicitly include health. Sound familiar? So that's our challenge, is we wanted to get health into this planning process, particularly exciting because it has to be done in all of the cities throughout New York, so if we figure out how to do it, we hope it'll be replicable. And also because we think it offers an opportunity to get people who otherwise really wouldn't care about or maybe even be aware of this planning process to care about it because they care about community health. So the yellow area is the city of Rochester, and as you can see, it's a kind of strangely shaped city. It follows the Genesee River from the canal, which is the very bottom left of the Erie Canal, all the way up to Lake Ontario to the north, and the red shaded area is the area that is addressed by the local waterfront revitalization planning process. So just a narrow buffer, essentially, around the canal, the river, and then these two beaches. There's a patch of beach. The one on the left is Ontario Beach at Charlotte, and the one on the right is Durand Eastman. So there's like a little island of the city of Rochester within this other town, which is basically just a park. So we started this process as HIA as well, trying to identify what is the overlap between the key health issues of concern in this community and how those health issues relate to the waterfront. And then the third question, bringing them together, how do waterfront changes that might be affected by the LWRP intersect with that, with health? And our goals are to make policy and planning recommendations that will maximize health benefits and minimize the risks in the LWRP. So, you know, one of the challenges of doing an HIA is that if you're trying to create information as part of a planning process that's going along quickly, there's always an issue of timeliness. We have the opposite problem. We started our work in January, and the city still hasn't actually started its LWRP process. Still due next June, so I think they're going to have a really compressed time planning period. But it's important to know that in assessing the impacts, we had to essentially guess what their plan is going to say. Fortunately, we could look at LWRPs from other towns. We could look at what the old LWRP said, and that led us to these five areas that we're pretty sure the plan will address and that relate to health. So trails improvements. There are bike and walking trails pretty much along the length of that area that I mentioned to you, or showed you earlier. Beach amenities, port development. We have this little port and marina area. It's not used for shipping, so the stuff that you've heard about, health impacts around goods movement isn't relevant. It's really primarily a recreational destination, except for this short period of time where we had a ferry that went from Rochester to Toronto, which was just too cool to last. Nobody really wanted to visit Rochester, apparently. And then the changes in residential and commercial development in that area, and water quality improvements. So we are focusing on a couple of those areas that we think are going to be most relevant to health: the waterfront trails, residential communities in a couple of areas, and the beach areas. Now, because we are focused on water quality today, I am focusing on the beach areas. So as we were taking a step back to how could a beach influence health, an obvious one is physical activity. If people go to swim or exercise at a beach, that's health promoting. Health supportive resources more generally, so it's a place where people gather and they might be stress relieving. Another is a physical safety is a concern or an issue. People do drown, they get hurt. So that's on the negative side, we have to think about that. And also on the negative side, waterborne diseases. So in a little bit more detail, beach youths can promote health through active recreation, water-based recreation particularly, and stress reduction, but there's the downside of drowning injury and waterborne disease. So we're trying to figure out how to balance those things as we do our analysis. It's important to know that our beaches are closed a lot due to water quality, and there is daily testing during the open season and a modeling process that decides every day whether the beach is going to be open or closed. It's based on bacterial levels. And it's also important to know that lots of people swim at one of the beaches, the Durand Beach, even when it's closed for water quality. So one of the beaches, they essentially enforce nobody can go near the water when it's closed, and the other one is more sort of laissez-faire. You know, they can't really chase you off because it's a very long beach. So there's no swimming that is allowed at the guarded beach when there's poor water quality, but there's this other area that's sort of unguarded. And one of the things that the city has been considering and the county is an algae pump that literally would take the algae off the swimming beach and pump it, ironically, towards the other beach to clear out the swimming beach and make it more conducive to swimming. So again, HIAs are usually relying on existing information. So we looked first to see what information there was related to those issues. There are counts, numbers of bodies in the water on the beach on days when it's open. There is data on how often the beach is open and closed. There's sort of anecdotal historical information about how so many more people used to use these beaches. And then through the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of press and understanding and just really bad water quality. The water quality has improved significantly, but the number of users is clearly not up to anywhere like it used to be. You know, there are pictures of standing room only on these beaches from the early 1900s, and it was actually a destination where people had summer cottages and came to. It's not at all like that now. But there really wasn't any information about how much people were using this except during the guarded areas and times, who uses it, their demographics, where they come from, how they're using it, whether they're just lying there soaking in the sun or if it is active recreation, if they actually get wet and how wet. And we had people say, well, nobody really swims here. If it gets really hot, they come and they wade into about here and they just stand there. So there really isn't much health risk of them getting exposed to waterborne disease. Whether those users understand risks from water quality and what their opinions are about future use. So just a picture of, we know that this is a kind of a unique beach area, people standing in the water, possibly swimming, playing volleyball, making beach sculptures, but nobody had any data about that. So one of the first steps in an HIA is to develop a health determinant pathway to show how the changes in the policy could lead to effects on health. So in purple, we're going to focus on the algae pump that would presumably lead to water quality improvements. And that, in the blue boxes, then would result in environmental changes, hopefully including the number of beach closings going down, less algae, lower bacteria levels, and less bad smell. And those things, in turn, could affect health determinants, physical safety, physical activity, exposure to bacteria, and then health supportive resources. And then on the far right is the health outcomes that we think each of those would affect. Now you'll notice we have arrows for some of these and question marks for others. So we have no data on the size or magnitude of those impacts, and we don't even know which direction some of them would be. So we decided we really needed more information, and we had the ability to do a small user survey of people who were actively using the beach, and we surveyed people on both beaches to find out about their demographics, how they're using the beach, their impressions about water quality, and their preferences for future changes. Try to give us a sense about which direction those arrows should be going. So I just want to highlight a couple of the findings that we had so that to frame the question that I have for you. We did find that most people were engaged in some sort of active recreation at the beach, many more swimmers at the Durand Beach than at the Ontario Beach, but overall nearly half people were swimming. A significant number were also walking, doing sports and other active things. We also were curious where people came from and whether this was an active transportation destination, whether people were taking the bus there, whether you know, increased bus routes might change usage patterns, and it turns out pretty much everybody drives there. There is no bus to Durand Beach, so that's not surprising. There is a bus to Ontario. But also surprising that people do travel quite a ways to get there. So in terms of whether this is a neighborhood resource or a community resource, larger community resource, that was very useful information for us. We also asked people if they'd been affected by certain water quality related issues. And we asked this question because it had been in a survey of the general population for a couple years running. So we were able to compare beach users to the general population. And not surprisingly, people who were using the beach had felt they were much more significantly affected by beach closings and odor and algae in the water than the general population. Even though they were beach users, very few of them thought that they had gotten sick after swimming. So just a side note, the number of official cases that the health department attributed to swimming at this beach was, well, one person thought they had, and when they did the modeling, they figured they would have had to have drunk about 50 gallons of the lake water to actually have gotten sick from that. So a little bit of contrast between people's perception and what the health department believed. In terms of future preferences, people at Ontario Beach, which is the one where the algae pump would go in because there are so many closures due to algae, were most strongly in favor, so higher numbers means more strongly in favor of improving water quality. People at Durand felt that better facilities were even more important. There aren't restrooms there or changing rooms, so it's not surprising that water quality was also quite high up there. And in terms of things that might reduce their beach usage, again, water quality was also really important, but parking fees was even more so. So people are very worried about trade-offs between the cost of using this resource, more so than about water quality. So interestingly, given how important people think water quality is, less than half of them checked to see whether the water quality was okay for swimming or not before they trucked that 10 miles to go to the beach. A lot of people said, oh, I didn't know you could check, or, well, I didn't because I don't get wet, the water's safe enough regardless of what the official advisory is, or I don't know how. Interestingly, a significant number of people in this other category told us that they checked on the internet, and according to the city and the county, they don't announce this on the internet, so they were really kind of curious how people were finding out something they didn't know. You're getting a theme here that there were some gaps that the government agencies weren't aware of. So we found the beach is a source of active recreation for many of the people who are using it. People feel strongly that water quality is pretty bad there and that that interferes with how much they'd like to use it, but they don't actually check to see how bad the water quality is. There's clearly a gap in their understanding of the causes, the health consequences, and possible ways of improving water quality. We've got lots of people anecdotally telling us, well, why don't they just scoop up the algae and shoot it off there, and that will make the water quality, you know, magically better. Even if they're leaving the bacterial levels there. And therefore, this planning process should probably include something that has to do with educating the public about water quality, and it's not anywhere in that planning process. So there's a strong desire for improving water quality. There's this gap in understanding, but that means it's unclear how, even if you improve the water quality, if that will actually affect people's use patterns, right? So if you pump the algae out and the water quality gets better, you might increase physical activity, but only if people now trust that the water is clean. The water is much cleaner than it was 10 or 20 years ago. People still aren't using it. So I have my doubts about whether that would happen just by pumping the algae out. Increased access to health supportive resources, but only, again, if people believe that this is a clean and pleasant place to be. Increased physical safety, but only if people behave and follow the rules and swim in the guarded area. If they decide the water quality is better, so many more people swim and they swim during the unguarded times, you could actually inadvertently increase the drowning risks. And again, also, you could decrease waterborne disease, but only if people understand that the beach is open more often, but you still shouldn't go there if it's closed, right? So if people generally get the idea that swimming at the beach here is a good thing, and so many more people swim at the beach, but you don't link that to understanding the conditions under which it's safe, you could increase risks. So that's sort of a puzzler, because water quality's impact on health is going to be modified by whether people trust the policymakers and managers, whether they believe that the water quality is completely safe, sometimes safe, or still dirty. Their behaviors, whether they just wade in or they decide it's fine to, you know, do full immersion now. These folks are doing yoga, and, you know, some poses are going to be more risky than others, and their understanding of what the health threats from pollution are. So we have to modify our health determinant pathway, right? So there are these red boxes at the top saying that the link between environmental change and health effect is modified by people's trust, belief, their practices, and understanding, and how that affects their behavior. Now, there really isn't a spot for that in health impact assessment yet. And that's what I'm really curious about and would be interested in your feedback on. So if you think about the health impact assessment framework, that question of modifying the impacts by people's beliefs and perceptions feeds into all the stages. So when you're screening whether an HIA will work or not, how much of that health effect really is dependent on the policy you're studying? How much of it is outside of that policy process, just dependent on education and understanding? When you're scoping, it means that you may need to have a broader set of partnerships than the ones who are obviously involved in that decision if you want to affect those beliefs and behaviors. In terms of assessment, much more emphasis on the social science side of things, understanding what people's perceptions are, that the recommendations may be outside the scope of the policy. So again, LWRPs do not include things like there should be more public education. Ours is clear. One of our recommendations is clearly going to be that there should be more education. And then in terms of reporting and evaluation, trying to figure out if your policy has had a positive effect requires some different approaches, right? So if you're just looking at whether the policy has improved water quality, that's pretty easy to monitor. But if you really want to know what the health effects are, you need to also be measuring people's perceptions and behaviors. I am inspired by this example. I went to college in Providence a long time ago when it was the armpit of New England, and I quote my aunt as I was headed off to college. There was this nasty cement area that you would scurry across to get to the train station and hope not to get mugged or harmed on your way there. Since that time, it has been dug up and made into a major tourist and recreational facility or resource. So there's a beautiful river now. They have these water fire events where hundreds of thousands of people come to experience this river that didn't exist before, right? But the lesson is that it's not just that they created a river there. They created a resource and really drew people to it in a very comprehensive way. So that gives me hope that if we learn the lessons from a place like Providence, we could really build on the resources that we have in Rochester. But we need to take a broader view than the way the HIA was initially set up to do. So that was something I would love your feedback on. If we don't have time now, that's how to reach me. And thank you very much. Yeah, so my understanding is that normally the use advisories are based on bacteriological pollution, right? Most, I think we're going to hear about that from some of the other speakers. But a lot of the advisories that have to do with toxins have to do with fish and shellfish consumption, right? So we do have fish consumption as one part of our HIA. I was just focusing on the algae pump and the bacteriological contamination because that one's even more complicated. But because those contamination levels are nothing that the city of Rochester can control. It's the entire watershed of Lake Ontario, the legacy of toxic pollution over the last 100 years. So, that is even more complicated, and we'll have to deal with that in our fish consumption section. Thanks. Yeah. Yes, please. On the entire lake? Thousands of them. I'm sorry? Yeah, no, I couldn't possibly. But and in Canada and in the U.S., if you're curious about legacy, we do have high levels of silver in the Genesee River because we're the home of Kodak, but they aren't discharging silver, most of the contaminants of concern anymore. They're in the sediments. The fish advisory is due to a chemical that was released by Hooker Chemical, behind Love Canal, and that they stopped releasing 20 years ago. But that still is the reason for the fish advisory that we have. In place.
Are there any scientists in the area in Rochester that use lines that data to characterize?
Yeah, but mostly having to do with not industrial but agricultural and land based nutrient pollution. Welcome. Any other questions? Okay. Oh, yes.
The algae are due to the nutrients. Is there a project
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are. But again, this is a local waterfront plan for the city of Rochester. And I'm working with the stormwater management people for the county to try to find out if there's really any appreciable contribution of nutrients from the city, its land area at all. This watershed goes all the way up to the Pennsylvania line. And then if you're talking about the lake, of course, you've got the watershed in the U.S. and Canada of entire Lake Ontario. So, even if the city of Rochester itself were able to completely shut off the amount of nutrients that it's putting into that system, we'd still have algal blooms. Even if we were able to shut off the entire Genesee River, we would probably still have algal blooms. And that's a really hard thing for the public to understand. They just think that we should install a pump and get rid of the algae and everything will be better. Yeah, thanks.